If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine light and sound of the Eternal One, in whom we live and move and have our being. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christ. This evening, our seminar topic is, you, as soul, have a divine destiny. You, as soul, have a divine destiny. So, if you're ready, take a deep breath and open yourself up to as much of the revelation of what that might be for you as would be for your highest good tonight. And just ask to have whatever would best serve you in your spiritual life at this point in time, that might be revealed to you in a way that will be digestible, something that you can dance with and partake of, so that it will set well with you and give you a greater impetus and sense of purpose in your life. So many people seem to have amnesia when it comes to their purpose. Very few people, I think, would probably even refer to having a divine destiny. Even people who seem to be awakened. So, what is your destiny? Go ahead, have a guess. Because it's what you've come in to work with this time. So, take another deep breath and allow the soulific light of your divine presence to illumine your whole mind. See the head filled with light, your brain, and then your mind, which is that body of golden light that forms like a halo, but a very large halo around your head. Visualize it, if you will. That's your mental body. It's just a field that's filled with divine awareness. And as much of that as can possibly trickle down is what comes into you as a sense of knowing when it is translated from the mind through the soul and high self into your conscious cognition, your field of consciousness. And you create a bridge for that interplay and that downloading every time you meditate, every time you contemplate deeply. Who am I? Why am I here? What is my higher purpose? I want to have greater divine connection. I want to receive clearer communication. I want to know. Those are evocations to that part of you that does know, that is eternal. So, your present nowness is your destiny. And overall, we could say conscious divine awareness is the destiny of every soul, so that it awakens to its omnipresence, its all-knowingness, and its all-powerfulness, which is expressed simply as love, wisdom, in this particular solar system, planet, and universe. So that would be the destiny of all souls in this particular expression of divine creation. So your destiny is where you are right now in this moment. It's all of your previous choices and what they have created as your present nowness of life. Last week, we spoke a little bit about how souls got into this classroom of experiential stage settings that we call lifetimes. And so I would like to continue a little bit with that and also give the Venusian perspective. We want to look at how this gets involved, how we can dance with it, and the astral plane, which contains so very many of our creations that color and influence us right now in the physical plane. So, again, this is a Venusian perspective from the teaching that we call the Eternal Way. And it involves the teachings of the spiritual travelers of light and sound, which together is how God communicates with each one of us, through light and sound. And the two of these together form what we call Divine Spirit, or the Holy Spirit, which is the teacher of us all, with a capital T. That is the teacher that teaches within, through your conscience, and through your intuition, and your sense of knowing. Every one of us has an inner master, and it's the same one. Although you may have very many outer teachers, you have one divine inner master, which is the true guru. And every outer guru is simply a reflection into the realm of form of that one teacher. So the first thing that starts off the whole process, and I want you to imagine what it might feel like to be in an airplane, getting ready to do your first skydive, okay? Soul is very much like that, positioned in the allness of God, very happily playing in the bliss of higher consciousness. But there was a need for conscious embodiment to attain mastery, and mastery is only attained through experience, through immersion in the fields of what we call karma and reincarnation and time and cause and effect and matter and energy. All of these things give experience. And through experience, mastery is attained, which in our case here would be conscious God realization or conscious divine awareness. So the thing that starts the ball rolling is called primal karma, which is a primal imprint. And it represents that soul that's given a push out of the plane. Say they're standing at that open door and they're frozen in fear. And just a gentle push is given to that person. And they're out of the safety of that plane. And they find themselves free-falling into material existence. So that initial push is what we could call the primal karma, or adi karma, as it's called in Sanskrit. And the purpose of it is to give you a reason to act. So the lords of karma, which are a board of very benevolent divine beings, who supervise the evolvement and matriculation of souls through the planes of experience, they give each one of us a primal imprint. It could be one of feeling like you were rejected by God. It could be one of feeling like you're not loved by God, or that you're unworthy, or even that you don't need God, and to heck with God, and I'm worthy, and I'm God, and I can do it all myself. Usually, those are the two primal imprints that I see most often in people. Either we feel we were rejected, and we keep trying to earn God's love through good works, or we feel like, who needs you? You know, you rejected me, so I'll reject you. And these are two real common primal imprints. But if you look at your own life, you might see this tendency. Are you a person that's constantly trying to suck up and curry favor and be loved by what you do and what you give and how good you are? Are you trying to return to God through some form of penance or holiness or piety or what you do with your service? I tend to have that pattern myself. Or are you the person that's like, nah, who needs God? I don't believe God exists. I'm God. I can handle it all. You know, you find the rebellious spirit who, you know, is going the opposite direction from what we would call those that are seeking to curry God's favor. The truth is, you already have God's favor. You are God. You are an incarnation of one divine Atma, one divine spirit. So that's a done deal. We're talking about getting the ball rolling so that you get into life and start having experiences, which is what happens when the soul force interacts with what's called the human mind, the lower mind. That's what generates activity. And until the two meet and start dancing, nothing happens. So you have to have a human body with a human mind, an ego mind, in order to engage in life, which is part of the standard issue here for soul to gain experience. So you have the adhikarma, which is the push out of the airplane, and then you have daily karma, which is the results of the actions that you do throughout the day, good, bad, or indifferent, whatever. And that's called kriman, K-R-I-M-A-N, karma. And kri is the root for do, or doing. So it's the daily doing and believing that you're the doer that creates your daily karma. And then there's destiny, or fate karma. And that is what's called in Sanskrit prarabdha karma. And that's the result of your lifetime of choices, but really speaking, it's the total and sum total of all of your lifetimes of choices. That is, until you have learned a lesson to transcend to a higher level of divine awareness. So you might say that the soul has its own little, its own destiny, which would be to unfold through faith and by practicing higher awareness through trusting in a higher power, whether that's God or the high self or the soul or the master, whatever. It's an orientation that is specifically divine in its focus. And then you have the ego, the mini-me, who seems to have an agenda of making life particularly hard for itself. And it manifests as the school of hard knocks. And so you have these two routes, which we as the conscious operative here in this paradigm here, we as the conscious self decide whether we want to act out the soul's destiny or the ego's school of hard knocks destiny, and we get to decide by our choices which one we're going to activate. And choice is what activates the destiny here. So that's your destiny karma. And then you have reserve karma. This is the let's say, the serving on your plate of life for this time around that you want to eat or consume or deal with. And that's called in Sanskrit, sinchit karma. So, in the reserve karma, you also have, like in a bank account, you have a reserve amount that you can draw on, whether it's debits or credit. You can sometimes draw in a moment of great need upon your light quotient or your bank account of credits. And sometimes that redirects your life in a very dramatic way, when that's allowed. And it's not always a good idea to draw on it, because it's better to, as Jesus said, have your reward in heaven than here, where moths and robbers and rust and so forth can steal and corrupt. So those are the main, let's say, impetuses that cause us to interact with life and have experiences. So no one is ever a victim of circumstances, because everything we have, we are involved with, we're fascinated with, we have an attraction to or an aversion and hatred towards, all of those things were self-generated by former actions and involvements at another time and place. And we're also, let me point out, not a victim of our karma either, of any level, because the grace of God can wipe out all of that karma in a nanosecond, if and when that is deemed to be feasible, which would be in the case of someone that's already learned the lessons, that doesn't need to go through any more karma. They've been through it. They're manifesting the quintessential lesson that was to be learned through that interaction. So in that case, the slate could be wiped clean. And sometimes in the case where you are a conscious disciple of a master, the master will lessen the effects of karma if you've worked out most of it already. So these are things to bear in mind. You're never a victim, even of yourself, even of your own foolishness. You know, if you say, I'm sorry, God, you know, I know better now, I'm not going to make this mistake again, and you don't make that mistake again, you can have it lifted and absolved. So you're probably, if you've lived long enough, if you're over 50, probably this would be the best thing that best apply to you. If you've lived long enough, you'll find that it's generally in hindsight that you can see the predominant overall theme and pattern of your life. So to acquire an overview of your life and soul destiny, I've done this and I found it very, very helpful. It's to enumerate your life in 7 or 12 year cycles, because the whole of the physical body is remade in 7 years. And in the 12-year cycle, the totality of your being is regenerated down to every single cell. So mark out your life, if you want, in your journal when we're finished here, in 7 year portions. And write down what happened, the major events, the turning points, the challenges, whatever it was that you were dealing with then and doing. And then, if you want, do a 12-year cycle. And just see the pattern of your incarnation. That would be your destiny in this lifetime. Maybe your destiny is to deal with an addictive pattern and overcome it. Maybe your destiny was having constant challenges in the area of relationships or finances or dealing with homelessness or dealing with warfare or dealing with incarceration. You see, you can have all kinds of destinies where when you look back, it's like, well, wow. You know, you may see you've been in and out of incarceration, in and out of situations in which you felt imprisoned, or in and out of situations where you had very little control. These are parts of that fate karma or destiny karma that we were speaking about, where you've come in to deal with a particular situation. It could also be a destiny of where you meet your master, become initiated, and move into self and God realization. Maybe your karma is where your destiny is, where you like in my case, where you just meet all of these great souls. You know, you travel all over the world and you meet very, very highly evolved great souls. That was my destiny. So whatever your destiny is, it's what it is, and it's what you personally have created and also imported into this lifetime for your own edification and self-mastery. So bless it, whatever it is, and make it work for you. Work it. Work through it. And if you can clear it and heal it, you don't have to endure it. But if it isn't healing and it isn't working, then at least be at peace with it, accept it, and do the best you can with it, because it will turn as an enormous blessing to you in the times to come. You could not have made a single error in your life, or so-called sin, that will not turn and be a tremendous blessing in your future service and in your future life. So there's no bad news here at all. Once you put your foot on the path Godward, all things work together for your good. Everything. There's no wasted moments or experiences. So the major thing that we are to do now is to become self-realized. And that is to know yourself as soul in incarnation. You don't have a soul. You are a soul having a human body and the opportunity to gain experience through that human body. So to understand that you have created for yourself the life that you're experiencing as your destiny is, I think, very, very useful. It gets you out of that mental trap of feeling like you're a victim of circumstances, or if things could have been different, your life could have been different. No, it couldn't have. It's supposed to be exactly as it is. And whatever is going on is there to ultimately advance you in your mastery, as you master it, as you deal with it, lovingly, attentively, with responsibility, which is the ability to respond within that situation in a way that works for you. So you most realize yourself as soul before you realize yourself as God. God realization would be when you awaken to the Atma or the spirit self or the monad or the I Am presence. That's where you awaken in your Godhood. Self-realization has to do with awakening to yourself as soul. It's where you suddenly realize that you're not your body. You're not your mind and your thoughts. You're not your feelings and your emotions. You're not your imagination. You're not your subconscious, your unconscious, your basic self, or your high self. You're not your personality. You're not even who you think you are. You are a pure emanation of God. You are soul. And that soul is immortal. All souls are equally divine. All souls are equally holy and beautiful and perfect. It's when they are interacting with the mind and expressing through the human being with free will and free choice that you see the difference. But that's only very temporary in the learning arenas. When you get out of the learning arena and you're simply soul, you're equally beautiful, perfect, holy, and divine. So soul is within the human being the God particle. And God is the totality of all souls, of all creation, and of all that exists. So that's a good way to look at that. And then when you move into God realization, you experience yourself as the many, as living and dwelling within the hearts of all beings, which is, as I've said many times, the state of Sai Baba, for example, who is a God-realized full avatar. But we have that also as a potential. Being an avatar is a choice. You know, it's a job assignment of a soul that comes to embody God as much as God could embody through a human being at that particular point in history. But it's not an isolated event. You know, the job is open to any who could step into that and be that. So the destiny of every soul is to reveal divinity, to be God, to reveal God, to be God-like in every way. And wherever that soul may be manifesting, whichever planet or world or sun or star system or whatever, it has the same destiny to reveal the divine. And masters and avatars have attained that state when only the divine manifests through them and nothing else. And that's why they are worshipped and revered as God. They have literally become one with God when they're God-realized. So it's not the body of the person that you're worshipping. It's the divine principle that you see that they have become one with. Now, we all speak about the kingdom of God and the ascension into that and the new earth and all of that. But what is that, practically speaking? Practically speaking, the kingdom of God that most of us hope will appear and manifest on earth one day is simply the appearance of more and more self-realized people on earth. What's a self-realized person? A self-realized person is living from conscious soul awareness. In other words, they have awakened as soul, and they're living from that state. And soul awareness is demonstrated through right relationship with all life. So the minute you come into divine attunement with soul, you begin to come into right relationship with yourself, with the divine, with other people. You come into kinship with all life, and that soul awareness. And that always reflects itself in some form of service. So another way of looking at it is that the soul is very readily revealed through loving kindness and proactive goodwill. It's a sense of kindliness and benevolence towards all things, all people. In fact, it's the default setting of the soul. Is that it responds lovingly and kindly, regardless of the situation or the persons involved. So that's probably the most notable of the characteristics of a soul-directed person. And service, by definition, is whatever you do out of the intention to assist in bettering life in some way for another, without any personal payoff or expectation of payoff. So to the soul-directed person, service is a natural and spontaneous response to any perceived need. And it is very, very natural, regardless of the person or the situation. It's not something that's pre-thought out or planned. Usually that's the ego. So the soul-directed act places no demands and no expectations of a personal nature upon service. Now, doing something for which you are getting paid puts it more in the category of a job or a professional career. Then in order for it to be more than that and to be elevated to soul-directed service, it has to be done in a spirit of surrender and detachment to God, offering your action to God. Then it becomes a yoga or karma yoga, as it's called, desireless action, action without an eye to the fruit or the result thereof. You don't even look back to critique whether or not you were doing it right. You don't even go there. You act, and then you let the act be wiped from your mind and let your reward rest in the higher planes. That's how you do nishkama karma, or desireless action. So let's look at the role of the laws of cause and effect in terms of your destiny. The law of cause and effect is the automatic return in like kind and degree of any energy that you send forth. So with every expression in thought, word, and action, you're sending forth an energy that guarantees a like return to you. And there simply are no idle thoughts, no idle words, and no toss-away idle actions. Every single thing that you set into motion sets into effect something that will return to you in the same way, the same manner, and the same degree. And that's called the law of karma. So karma is really very, very benevolent, and it accounts for the many seeming injustices and inequalities that we see in this world. All of the haves and have-nots, the deformed babies, the wars and conflicts, babies that are stillborn or die in their cribs, people who are maimed in accidents and become paraplegic, all of the different things are part of that balancing action that we call the law of karma, which is entirely impersonal. It does not seek out people to wreak vengeance upon. It is simply the automatic returning of the seeds that have been sown in this or previous lives, and usually it's previous lives that we don't remember. So it accounts for the wars and the conflicts, as well as those who seem to have all of the benefits of a good home and a peaceful life and escaping, you know, from tragedies and conflicts. Those that seem to have lots of wealth and success and beauty and good health and so forth. But in every case, each has simply reaped from previous seeds sown. Even a person that, for example, wins the lottery, they may not look like they're deserving. They may not know how to manage that money. It may not work really well for them. But if you look at the past of these souls, they have been very generous and have sown seeds of generosity and benevolence at another time. So the soul will alternate and have every experience from being a king and having great, great, great wealth, to being a pauper, to being a bad person, to living on the streets, to being a beggar, whatever, and lives where they've been greatly virtuous and lives when they've been really in a state of debauchery. And this is how soul gains all kinds of experiences in every kind of a level of consciousness and expression. And of course, if you judge and have a really negative attitude about, for example, gays or people who have abortions or people that commit suicide or people of a different race or color or creed, look out, because that's going to be your next incarnation. So that's why you're taught by Jesus to judge not, lest you be judged. For with the same degree that you mete out your judgment or whatever, it shall be meted out to you. So that's why you learn to zip it. You don't have a negative statement or a critique or a judgment about anyone. You stick to your own karma, your own destiny. You fulfill to the best of your ability your life plan. And you bless everyone. You bless everyone. That's why Jesus said, bless and pray for the people that abuse you, that are negative, that seek to harm you. Pray blessings for them. Don't, no, seek to have revenge and to hurt them or harm them. No, pray blessings. Pray for their abundance so they won't have a desire to steal from you. Pray that they have peace of mind so they don't spend their time trying to attack and harm. Pray for people that they awaken to the love they are so they won't desire to pick up a gun and start shooting people at random. They won't have desire to commit terroristic activities. Pray for these souls that they wake up, that they have a Damascus Road conversion where suddenly they see the light of God and they're transformed inwardly from their terrorizing activities. That's how we can really, really help people and also help ourselves by not creating a lifetime where we're going to have to incarnate as a terrorist or something like that, because we've had so much negative energy of judgment towards them. So be smart. Create for yourself the best by wanting the best for everyone. Everybody is part of God and deserves God's love. Everyone. I don't care who they are. Pray for them and bless them. So the law of karma, or reciprocity, or cause and effect, is entirely impersonal and automatic and governs all things in this universe. All things. The karmic law is neutral in its operation and simply returns in like manner everything that we have sent forth energetically. So there's no punishing, vengeful God or Mother Nature that's out to get you, or that's keeping score in some cosmic ledger. No, it's simply the law, the very impersonal and just law of cause and effect, sowing and reaping. And the twin companion of karma is reincarnation or re-embodiment, which is also impartial and just. Very, very just. When you look at it from a higher level, it's like, oh, wow, everything is the way it needs to be. Because that's the way each one of us have created, allowed, promoted, and requested that it be in our lives. So, what else can I tell you about this? So, you're given as many choices of operation and as many chances in life as you require to learn a particular lesson. And there's really, when you boil it all down to its essence, there's really only one lesson that all experiences are designed to awaken us to, and that is that we are pure divine love. We are an embodiment of God's love, made manifest through a human form. And that's the lesson. When you've learned that, you're off the hook. You don't have to come back here unless you choose to come as an avatar or a bodhisattva or a Buddha or a servant of some sort or one of the masters of the spiritual hierarchy or the celestial realms. That no longer has to come in and work out karma, but comes in to be a way shower for other souls. So until you fully embody as pure divine love, you will keep returning to the earth or a similar planet, where you can reap the results of whatever you have set into motion for yourself. And every desire binds you to the plane where that desire can be best experienced and worked out. So you'll return to the dimension, the place, or the planet where you have invested the most energy. So look at your life. Where are you investing the bulk of your attention and your energy? That's where you're creating your future destiny. Yeah, you're doing it. So if you have been heavily involved in the physical desires and the fulfillment thereof, with a lot of wishes and attachments to the material plane, you will return to Earth. Until you have outgrown those attachments and desires for physical and material things and experiences. As soul progresses in its long series of lifetimes of experience, it reaches a stage when it's had enough. It's been there, done that, bought the beanie, it's tired of it. Then the attention shifts to that of a seeker for whatever it is that lies beyond the physical. Now, each dimensional plane is the reflection of the one just above it, and they're not really stacked like pancakes, but they're in gradients of light densification and light energy or vibration. So the physical plane is the reflection of the astral plane. And the astral plane, which is the next, excuse me, the next level just above the physical, resembles the Earth in a more vivid and colorful manner. It's much, much larger than the physical plane, and it is the plane created entirely by humanity's imagination. So it's as much an illusion and a dream and a conjuration of our illusion, forgetting who we are, as the physical plane, but is as tangible and experiential as the physical, if that makes sense to you. Every plane is real when you're on it. Well, when you dream, you usually are dreaming in the astral plane. It's real, isn't it? Till you wake up like that. So the astral plane contains all of the things that we have imagined, and in that sense, the very beginning of conscious human imagining. So it goes back billions and billions of years. And also, it's the plane where all of the heavens and purgatories and hells are located, because it's a very vast plane. So whatever we have imagined, and it's all imagination, all created out of our ignorance, we have manifested on the astral. If you want to know a really good, if you want to watch a really good film that I think shows the astral plane really quite accurately, at least portions of it, rent a film, What Dreams May Come. And that's a good example of the variety of the sights that one can encounter on the astral plane. Now, when people have out-of-body experiences and near-death experiences, or they travel out of their bodies in UFOs, or simply through dreaming or projecting out-of-body through some technique of astral projection, you're in your astral body when you can see the silver cord. That is the connection to your astral body. The soul doesn't have that. The soul doesn't need that. So if you see the silver cord connecting your astral body to your soul body, like an umbilical cord, you're in your astral body. And you're in the astral realm. So when you're doing astral projection, which I do not teach and I do not recommend, but some of you have that experience, for example, when if you're undergoing surgery and suddenly you find yourself on the ceiling looking down at the operating table, you're in your astral body. And anesthesia will actually put you in that state, so that's why you don't feel anything. You're in the astral body. When you have those night terrors where you're trying to escape, you're trying to scream, you're trying to run, and no sound comes out, and you can't run fast enough, that's when you're not quite in your astral and you're not quite in your physical. You're caught in between, and you think you're in your physical, so you're trying to scream, but no sound is coming out, or you're trying to move, and no movement is happening. That's when you're just in that in-between state. And this frightens people sometimes very much. You have what's called a dream sensor, which is a part of your reticular activational system that warns you and shields you from remembering things that would frighten you when you are in your conscious self. So that's why many times you don't remember the things that you're experiencing. And when you have a dream that's frightening, it will be it'll come through as symbology that you basically don't understand what it is, so it doesn't worry you too much. But these are all ways that you kind of have set up within yourself to protect yourself so you don't scare yourself. Now, children who have nightmares, which is very common before the age of 6, they don't have that filter. They don't have that consciousness filter yet in place, and that's why children outgrow nightmares if they're prone to having them as a very young child. They outgrow that once they start to go to school and they begin to develop more of a conscious sense of reality here in the physical plane, which is a good thing. So when you soul travel, you're not limited to the astral plane like you are when you're astral projecting. And in soul travel, you go with spiritual travelers. That's where the the spiritual masters come and they take you and escort you. And one of the things they do is escort you throughout each one of these different planes. There's the astral, the causal, the physical, the etheric, and then the golden kingdom of soul, where you go in self-realization as a soul, and you don't need a guide there. There, everyone becomes one, so you don't have an outer reference point. But up until that level, you're trained to what's called soul travel, and you're always in a perfect protection with a master that is designed to work with people who have asked to have conscious self-realization in this lifetime. When that's your destiny, you will be met by a spiritual traveler, usually in the dream state. I was met when I was 12 years old. So, and then I met the actual master 20 years later. But when I was 12, the spiritual traveler came in to take me home, which was my request. So that will happen to everyone whose destiny is to return to God in this lifetime. And whether or not it's this lifetime, once you've met a traveler, you will return home within the next 4 to 10 lifetimes at the very, very max, generally, in this very lifetime, once you've met a traveler. So that's the value of having that as your destiny. But your desire brings forward that experience, even if it's not your destiny. So if that's what you want, ask. Ask that you be met by a spiritual traveler who can take you consciously home to God and acquaint you with all of these marvelous realms, because they're really wonderful to experience. My goodness, you can have such adventures when you go to sleep at night. Wonderful, wonderful adventures that become more and more conscious, so that you step out of one world and into another. And talk about storybooks and fairyland and fantasy and beautiful cosmic journeys. Oh, my heavens, you haven't seen anything yet. If you think the physical plane is beautiful, wait until you open your eyes on the astral. And each level, they're more and more glorious. In fact, it's been said that if you could see the God, there's a God on each of these dimensions, if you could see the God of the astral plane, whose single strand of hair is as bright as 10,000 suns, you would absolutely think that this was the ultimate God of all gods, and you would fall down and worship. And that's why you have to go with a spiritual traveler, because they know that there's more. They won't let you get stuck in those lower realms, but they will let you experience them and meet these great regents, these great lords of these different realms, in a perfect protection. And, it's marvelous. Marvelous. Never be afraid of your spiritual path. You cannot fall out of God. You can't get lost. You can't die. You can't be destroyed. All of that, when you have those experiences, are just dream fantasies in your mind. It's just stuff that you learn to look at and not let it rattle you at all. You'll be trained to look at those things on the inner plane as well as the physical, and you'll be able to say, this is not real. God did not create war, therefore it's not real. God did not create death, therefore it's an illusion. God did not create torment, torture, and suffering, therefore it is entirely unreal. I choose to see the reality. I choose to see all safely home in God, where they remain eternally one with divine source. That's how you learn to stand and look at things without letting them upset you and frighten you and rattle your cage. So when you're doing astral projection and you're seeing, for example, above the operating table or in your room, or you're flying over your neighborhood, or you're flying even into the solar system, you're in your astral body and you can't go any further than the astral plane. And life on the astral plane is very similar to Earth. And that's where most people go when they pass out of incarnation and drop the physical body like an outworn garment. They are born into the astral realm. and there they recreate a life for themselves very similar to the one they had on Earth. They're met by loved ones, and they're taken to a home, and they have a life there very similar to the one on Earth. So they're in a state referred to in the Theosophical literature as Devakan, or the land of the Devas. And here they will experience the karmic results of what they have personally generated for themselves by the sum total of their thoughts, words, desires, interests, and deeds. So on the astral plane, you will manifest your predominant state of energy and consciousness, and you'll reap the reward of your good actions, as well as the effects of your negative actions, by that same karmic law. And when all has been experienced, both the good and the negative that you have generated, then the soul has returned to another life on Earth or a similar planet, because every planet has life on the other dimensions. In each solar system, there is one life zone that allows to having physical embodiment. And in this solar system, we're the Earth, where people can have physical consciousness. So if you embody on the astral plane, you could embody, for example, on Venus or Mars or one of the other planets in our solar system, and not necessarily the physical. And on each dimension, you have birth and death beneath soul. In soul, you're immortal, but beneath the soul realm or the fifth kingdom or the fifth plane, you have birth and death on each of the dimensional planes. When you have a dream experience where you have the experience of dying or being killed or fainting, that's when you die on that level, and usually you come back into your body. So that's what's happening when that happens. You're simply dying in that dream, and you're coming back to this level. And birth and death is nothing. Every time you go to sleep at night, it's a little death. The only difference is you wake up in the morning, and with death, you wake up on the other planes. But it's exactly the same. There's nothing to be afraid of, absolutely nothing. So Omniconic, which many of you have heard me speak of or have become acquainted with, is the woman who came to Earth directly from the astral plane of Venus. And she describes her process in her wonderful book, From Venus I Came, which you can get from her website. And they have also a paperback version on Amazon. But coming here from the astral plane and from the astral plane to Earth apparently happens more often than we realize. And she speaks about that, and that there's many from Venus that are here at this time from I assume they have come as she has, but not necessarily. Some of them were born or a few, you know, like myself, a consciousness back in time from the future. So she is one who has actually lowered the vibration of her astral body so that it could be in the physical realm. And it's nice to check that out because it's real. So some of the masters are appearing in our world today, having perfected themselves, but they're wearing a densified astral body, which looks like a physical body. It just can be invisible if they wish it to be by just shifting their vibration slightly. So as the Earth is raising in its vibration, the astral plane is actually merging with the physical and vice versa, so that there is a transfer more and more between the astral and the physical, and eventually this merger will completely erase the fear of death. For we will be able to see our loved ones in that higher dimension. We will have technology that will enable communication from the astral to the physical earth, and from the physical earth to the astral. And all of that awful, awful terror that we feel involving death will completely vanish, and we'll realize that life is eternal, life is ongoing, our loved ones never die, we see each other again, love is an eternal bond, and that's going to be such a relief for everyone. And nor is there a punishing and vengeful and wrathful God waiting to torment hapless sinners in hell. This is something that was made up by the priests a long time ago to keep people in control. And even the Pope has made an official statement that heaven and hell are states of mind. But if you have a strong belief in that and you've been indoctrinated forever and ever and a day, which many of us have been, then you might want to really look at that and awaken beyond that understanding that, no, there's not a vengeful, wrathful, punitive, wrathful God, and awaken to the God that is within you as the love that you are. You're actually creating for yourself your future out of body by how you live and treat others right now, right now. And you hold yourself to the line of accountability in that. So the human person eventually learns that it works best to be kind and loving and to do to others only what you'd like to experience in return yourself. And, you know, you learn by trial and error and many, many experiences in life that it's all about loving and being kind, and then you transcend the need to re-embody and to go through karma. And that is why all saints and highly evolved masters and avatars and spiritually advanced individuals are recognized for their loving compassion and selfless service. And that is the destiny that we're all moving into. Every single soul is somewhere on that equation, on that path. And we are all on the way to attaining full divine mastery when we will express and manifest as pure divine love and will be instruments of divine grace. And then we will be far beyond any karma or need for re-embodiment. Then we have conscious choice where we can go wherever we wish to be of service and to operate as a conscious co-worker with God and as divine emissaries. So the human destiny is to be godlike, and in that we all have the same divine destiny and calling. So I hope this has been helpful to you. We shall continue as we look at the other realms and planes and dimensions and awaken more and more to the marvelous soul that we are and the marvelous journey that we're on. Let's take a deep breath and go out chanting, Anai Hu. Deep breath. And if you want to connect with one of those spiritual masters of light and sound, just chant that Hu. You can chant Hu alone or Anai Hu, either one, and they will find you and take you on a marvelous soul journey if you so desire. So raise your hand and send forth your blessings to all the souls, wherever they are, in whatever school of consciousness they're passing through, and bless them that they awaken to their full divine destiny as immortal divine beings. Baruch Hashem Adonai.